Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
And gentlemen, let's get ready to be inspired! Introducing in the red corner, American Tennis! And introducing in the blue corner, your host for American Tennis, Mr. Chuck Griese! Ladies and gentlemen, time to get in the game.
And good morning once again. This is Coach Chuck Griese, and welcome to another week of American Tennis. It is snowing in the south, and we are pretty much locked in to no tennis today, no tennis for a couple days, but it's all welcome stuff and pretty much a good change of pace. But this is the UR Tennis Network, and I'm Chuck Griese, and every week we have American Tennis, and we discuss issues that are controversial. Some are not. But for the last few weeks, we have had some controversy and a civil war going on, or a revolutionary war maybe, in American tennis. It has been very, very interesting as we have seen many, many top teams fall to lesser teams or lesser-ranked teams by the aid of a new scoring system that is not too welcome with the coaches and the players out there. It's been met with a lot of opposition. But we're going to talk about that and many other things today. We want to remind you the mission of American tennis is for you to stand up and to speak out, and to daggone it, say everything and anything that you want to say. We just ask you to address issues, not people. Stay professional. Edmund Burke said that all that it takes for evil to prosper is for good men, good people to do nothing. And we really do need people to stand up and speak out. And I want to remind you that this is the UR Tennis Network. Every week on UR Tennis Network, you have some wonderful shows. Lisa Stone Show, Parenting Aces, is every Monday at noon. Jason Haynes and his College Tennis Show is every Wednesday, Eastern Standard Time, 2 p.m., so you can call in an hour later or listen on your iPhone an hour later and get this. You can get this, all of these shows, the UR Tennis Network, on your iPhone. Just go to your iPod apps and download them or listen. They have each and every show that's given by the UR Tennis Network. U, R, the letter U, the letter R, the number 10, and the number S, the letter S. All you got to do is punch that in. You get each and every show, and we've been broadcasting now for over about 2 years. If you want to call in, Call in area code 714-583-6853, 714-583-6853, to talk to our guest today or to just give an opinion on college tennis or anything you'd like to give. ChuckCreasy.net is my website, K-R-I-E-S-E, ChuckCreasy.net. My camps are all lined up for the summer of 2014 in many places in the South. Two new camps at the Citadel in Charleston, South Carolina, and then some in Atlanta, Sumter, South Carolina, Lexington, South Carolina, Landrum, South Carolina. So if you'd like to come to my camps, go to that website, ChuckCreasy.net, and just click on the camps registration page, and you can get pretty much everything. So that's a lot of announcements, but I'd like to announce right now our guest for the show today, and I think Mike is on the line. Mike Napoli, Mike, are you on the line?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you great. I hope I'm not echoing too much because I'm in sort of a hollow room, and but if you know echoing, I'm gonna. You sound great. You're coming in loud and clear. But folks, we have Mike Napoli on the line, and Mike's done so much in tennis over the past 35 years, and I've asked him on the show for a particular reason. It dawned on me that, you know, pretty much we get the information every day from places that are comfortable for us to get them from and where we like. And I've been talking a lot to coaches that are in D1 and what their attitudes and their beliefs are about this new scoring system, the ITA, the state of college tennis, and many things. But Mike has done so much in the world of tennis. Mike, I'm just going to go through a couple things here, and then I'll come back and hit you with Mike. Two Hall of Fame positions. Congratulations there. You know, from where you work for over 20 years in San Luis Obispo in California, where you won 12 conference championships in 23 years, 9 times Coach of the Year. You also at your alma mater are a Hall of Fame member for college. And Mike, you're a pretty humble man. You didn't tell me all this. You've come to this side of the country now. You're at Ave Maria College down in Naples, Florida, and you're continuing to lead young people. But you've won many, many conference championships. You've built many, many teams. You've coached many players. You've U.S. clay courts as a player, you know, a professional player. You've been a teacher just about at every level. And, you know, you really, like most people in tennis, pretty much have used tennis as a vehicle. Tennis has been a vehicle for you to be a teacher. And that's obviously what you are, because Mike sent me an email just yesterday, folks. He said, this is what I really like to do, and He had a bunch of pictures of his wheelchair tennis programs that you do with handicapped. And, you know, I guess I would just like to start out. Can you talk about that program a little bit? Because, you know, we had Dick Stockton on Lisa Stone this Monday, Mike, and we also had Dick Stockton on our program 3 weeks ago. And Dick right now is heading up a Wounded Warriors program for with tennis, and it's being met with a lot of success. But could you talk about your program a little bit, the wheelchair, what you're doing, and we'll get on to more controversial issues in a minute?
Sure. Actually, I started with the wheelchair tennis some 18 years ago in California. A friend of mine, we were really serious rivals for state titles, and he was he taught disabled sports and physical and adaptive physical education. And he called me up one day out of the blue and he says, hey, I'm trying to work on this program of integrating wheelchair tennis with able body tennis, but at the collegiate level. And for me, I didn't even think about it. And then we got together. And the idea was that in community college, what you would have is an individual who would represent the college at a regional individual event to go on to the state event, not as a full team, but just as an individual. And our dream was is that when you're at the regional event, you'd also have able-bodied players playing next to wheelchair players. And we really were passionate about it. And for 2 years, we tried to promote it within the community college section, but it was turned down by every athletic director. And I never really forgot that, because one of the things that came to me was, if you look up the word competition, it's a Greek word. It means compare, which means fitness together. And you look up athlete, it doesn't say anything about able-bodied or disabled. And I was kind of looking at that and saying to myself, who are we? We ask able-bodied players, ask disabled people to support their program, but, you know, what about the reverse? What about the able-bodied supporting a disabled program that's intercollegiate? So I thought, well, you know, the best thing to do is work two avenues. One is to talk to other coaches about it at the ITA convention, get their opinions, but also do something that was proactive myself. So I was able to meet some individuals here at Naples. I actually just saw them on a court, wheelchair players, and went out and said, hey, how would you like to have a coach? And they said, great. And I said, well, this is what we're going to do. And what I did is I took my team, and I brought them down there for a clinic in which my players got in the wheelchairs, and they got to see what it was like. And then we had a up-down tournament, which is where one able-bodied player plays doubles with a wheelchair player in just kind of a fun round robin. But my bigger aspiration, was I went to the ITA to ask them about a rule, and that is, can I have a wheelchair player on my team to compete competitively as an intercollegiate player? And it kind of baffled them because they never heard of that before. And so my thought was, you know, I could go and I could recruit a wheelchair player to play on the women's team who is better than some of the able-bodied players. And the only thing is, it's just a rule variation. They'd have to play a one time. So what I'm doing is I'm hopefully in March with Mike Mercer up at the New England wheelchair program is to invite wheelchair players down here with the ones I work with and the ones in Miami to do a clinic and an exhibition and actually do an up-down with my team as an intercollegiate event. So that's the way I've looked at it. So that's what I'm involved in at the moment.
The message that is just popping out right here again, and you said it several times, the word passion. You know, passion is what inspires people. Passion is what people look for in athletics and sports. It's not the winning. It's not the losing. It's not the hype. I was telling someone recently, it was a top college coach yesterday, actually, when we were on the phone. I said, you know, the 10,000 days that I conducted practices and 1,100 matches or 35,000 individual 1,100 dual matches, either what you remember are those things that move your heart, touch your heart, relationship with people, basically. And you know what, Brian Gottfried on here, he's in Jacksonville, Florida, what a wonderful man, but he was on the show earlier this year, or actually in late December he was on the show. And he said that he was just always passionate about the game. He's now coaching at a high school there in Jacksonville. And he was just passionate about the game. And Dick Stockton, you know, why is he moved for what he's doing right now? Well, he's passionate about trying to help people through tennis. Do you see a pattern here? I mean, because what's going on now, and I've worked at some training centers of kids and everything, but everybody's so into the product. They're into the result, the result, the result. We all know that, you know, coaches have either been fired or they're waiting to be fired.
Yes.
One or the other. You're a teacher, but you know that, and I was hired as a teacher, but we always knew that we were hired as teachers, fired as coaches. But in the passion, you know, is there a void in passion? I mean, I'm asking a leading question, but what's your impression about what's going on generally in tennis today in the USA?
Well, you know, I'm a dinosaur. I've been actually teaching tennis for 43 years, and there's been a, you know, evolutionary process with tennis. I can remember back in the day before the golden era, and then all of a sudden tennis ballooned to be such a, you know, huge sport, even bigger than golf. And then it started to decline.
70s.
But I can also...
Late 60s,
yes.
70s, right?
Yeah, yes, exactly. 70s, yeah. Absolutely. And you had a simple format back then that I looked at, because I look at how I was raised when it... Basically, it's like looking at how they do, like, Pop Warner, looking at how they do youth basketball, you know, looking at how they do, you know, Little League Baseball. You could go to the public parks. You could sign up for very little instructional money. You had teachers and you had facility. And then what you had is you had competition. You had a format that was all based on bringing in the kids, having them participate, educating them with a facility, and then competition at the same time. The beauty of it was, and this may be one of the things I didn't do a lot, I didn't play a lot of junior ranked tournaments. And the reason for that is that I had tournaments with adults. They did it with, you know, ABC and an open. So when I graduated from, say, like the novice group into the C's, into the B's, I was always playing with veteran players. And some of them had, you know, had other kids, very good kids. And then I was playing in the open. So the accessibility of talent, the accessibility of facilities, and also the accessibility, and it really came down to how the public parks was very much involved. I have a little bit of a metaphor, if you don't mind.
Yep, we love them. We love them on this show. We give them all the time. Go for it, man.
Well, the metaphor is that you go to a forest and you say, "Wow, look at all those hundreds of trees. Aren't they just beautiful?" You go one tree to another. Oh, this is a big, beautiful forest. And then what you do is you pull out a map that's 40 years old, and half the forest is gone. But all you see are all these beautiful trees. And that's the way I've looked at college tennis. We look at all these programs that we have, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds. Then you go back 30 years, and you have maybe 40% less programs than you did then. So the overview is really the telling situation. And I can draw direct conclusions of what happened in the California Community College system when I started coaching with 70 teams, and now they're down to 38.
Background pretty much there and tell the story. You went there in the late 60s, early 70s, correct?
I was playing tennis in the late 60s and 70s in the community college, and then I played at a Chico State strong Division II program, and then I went on the pro circuit, then I started teaching in, you know, tennis, but then in the early 80s I was coaching with Hugh Bream, an assistant coach at Cal Poly, then I got the job at Cuesta College, and that was probably the apex of community college tennis for several reasons. One was that there were a lot of schools that had it. Over 70 schools had the programs. And then when I was leaving in 2009, which was my last year, we were down to 38. And there were reasons why this happened, but that's the straight out issue. In 2008, and I don't think that any of your listeners know this, except for maybe a couple of the California community colleges, and I don't even think the ITA knew this. In 2008, there was an executive action before the California Community College of Athletics, an executive action to eliminate all tennis programs at community colleges in California. It was an executive action. The colleges would not have a choice. They would just drop all those programs. That's how severe the situation got in California Community College.
Well, why was the reason given back then?
Multiple reasons. One is they were dealing with budgetary, and basically you're talking about a sport that's non-revenue. The other thing that you were talking about was a decline in certain participation levels, but mostly it was a budgetary issue. The community colleges were looking at how could they save money, and they thought the best thing they could do is just eradicate an entire sport. And I've been an assistant athletic director, so I had some inside knowledge about some of this coming up. But it was primarily for budgetary issues, and it was going to be one swell swoop. And the only sport they were talking about was tennis.
What year again was that, Mike?
That was 2008.
Okay. Now, so go back, though, to the great years. 70 schools playing. I mean, I remember Brad Gilbert actually went to college.
Oh, yeah.
And then he transferred to Pepperdine, and they had a lot of great players. That whole Northern Cal community college system was incredibly strong. Was it mainly Americans back then, Mike?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. As a matter of fact, I know the team that Brad Gilbert played on. He was a few years younger than I was, but they beat Stanford that year. And I would say that.
Wow.
And it was and the tennis there. And one of the things was is that, you know, California tennis in itself was huge. Like Texas, Florida, some of the other areas in the United States was huge. And most of all the players were from the community. I mean, they were local within 100 miles. So you had a tremendous amount of already infrastructure by the community, and that led to a tremendous amount of support, because not only did you have parents who were involved with their kids in tennis, now they were involved with the colleges with tennis because their kids were playing on it. It was a huge self-sustaining program back then. Things changed.
When did it start changing, and how many years, what sort of walk us through the process of where you started noticing differences?
Well, a couple of things. I started noticing the differences in the, I would just say, in the late 80s, early 90s. Some of the schools, it was basically got down to winning at all costs. And they brought in a tremendous amount of basically world-class internationals. And what happened was that some of the schools, when this happened, even though we had strong players, and that same, I mean, when you're bringing in world-class kids that have ITF points.
Let me jump in there. This morning I was reading an article from 2004 that was on my computer, and it was a New York Times article that was addressing this. On the front page of New York Times Sports, it said, we have foreign pros in American college tennis, and people should have been shocked out of their mind and done something about it. But the whole article goes about saying basically that you have foreign kids who play pro tennis for 4 or 5 or 6 years, and they have failed careers, or they decide, hey, listen, I've had enough traveling the world, let's go to American college. So what they do is they get scholarships to American colleges. Now, I know the problems that we have had even enforcing that over the past 35 years in NCAA, but in junior college, I bet it was just completely out of control. Once one team started doing it, then everybody had to do it in order to win. Is that correct? Am I telling you
correct?
Right?
Yeah, you are. But what you saw really was got out of hand was in the National Junior College Association. Now all of a sudden you had programs there that there wasn't one American on the team. This was community college. And now they have since changed the regulations where they can only give no more than 2 international scholarships per team.
And stop there also. John Peterson was on the phone from Tyler College in Texas back.
Mm-hmm.
You know John well then. But John was a year ago, and he said, you know what, we passed that rule and everybody went for it. It was such a problem. Now, why we never did that in the ITA, how could we not have done this? In every other country in the world, they only allow two foreign players. Like if you go to play soccer in Germany or on the Bundesliga, they only allow 2 American players. But we're so we're not smart. This is not smart because we basically our whole infrastructure of those 74 teams and all of those kids, 74 times 10, that's 740, let's say 1,000 kids from the Northern Cal area had a competitive arena where they could go from high school into playing junior college tennis. And you did something about it there. Our ITA always was scared to death, oh, we're going to have a lawsuit, we better not ever do anything about it. And that was such rubbish. I wish we would have pushed that, and I wish we would push that, because you see where we're at today with infrastructure of player development as far as colleges are concerned. We're on our deathbed in many ways, and it's because of international players primarily. So tell me if I've misstated anything, but I would like for you to go ahead and continue to tell this story. But it's such a comparison, I needed to jump in there. Go ahead.
Well, that you're exactly right. In a couple of schools, a couple of notorious schools, I won't mention them by name, in California, had all international players. It completely devastated the entire conference. Teams just couldn't compete, and their schools just dropped their program. And these were single.
You're saying they won, and then they ended up dropping that program, or other teams?
No. The other teams just dropped their program. You had a team that brought all internationals, and I mean these were world class internationals. These were not just kids that are just learning how to play. I mean these were bona fide.
That's right.
Bona fide kids, and a lot of them went to the junior colleges because they didn't have to meet the academic requirements of a four-year school. That was a big part of it. And then the four-year schools would use the JCs as a farming tool for their programs because they had to pass TOEFL and other issues. So that's what happened. Now, the other problem is that because these programs, these were programs that nobody could touch. They devastated the entire conference where the teams in the conference just folded. They no longer participated. Their athletic director told, hey, there's no way that we can compete with this. We're just, kind of spending money here. And they just folded up their, 4 or 5 teams in one conference folded up just because of that in one conference. So the other part was the fact that the international, the fact is that you have coaches that are in a situation where they do have, where they have to win. And now you get into an arms race. And as a result of that arms race, it's that you're looking for the best player that money can buy. And as a result, and I remember this, in the 70s, out of the top 100 ranked players in NCAA Division I, only 20 were international. Now it's over 70. So that should clearly explain where the market is, because that's what coaches are doing. They're going into the market.
Yeah, and here I'm so glad to hear you talking about this, and it's something we really do need to address. The last 2 months, the firestorm has been over the scoring system. And Steve Bellamy was on the show back in August, and he said, on the whole scope of things, scoring system should be about 8th or 9th or 10th what you're looking at. And I think that we're talking about probably the primary issue right now. I remember in D1 tennis, Mike, that about 1991, the NCAA imposed all their rules, foreign recruiting was starting to pick up. But it was 91, they imposed a 20-hour week work week and 25 matches a year, and you could only practice 24 matches, and all of these restrictions. And pretty much coaches said, whoa, wait a minute, we can't develop players anymore with that amount of time. We better get some players that are already made. And I got in some trouble for smarting off about too many internationals playing. In the 90s, we had one article written, but then the New York Times article in 2004, I wanted to say that it had a picture of the 2003 NCAA champion. People can go back and look at that. I think it was 2004, but it was 2003 or 4, right there. And this guy was holding the NCAA trophy, but then he was holding a 1999 check for like $11,000 where he had won a challenger event in Germany or somewhere, and the ridiculous hypocrisy there is that we didn't do anything about it. I've argued it's not about poor Matt, it's for not addressing these tough issues when they first came up. It's for not speaking out and saying, listen, there's no place for professional athletes in colleges. We didn't have the internet back then, and it got to be a can of worms. It was too big to shut. And then you had coaches who were recruiting, of course, the foreign players say, well, listen, I got to win for my school. The rationalization. And I always have argued that you are an educator first, an entertainer, or a coach second. You're an educator, you're a teacher first. Coach, and then, you know, if you want to put it in entertainment. So here's where we are now, Mike. We've got a problem. Right now, college tennis is in a bugaboo. We're in big trouble. And a continued 450 teams drop, not just all of the community college programs in California, but 450 college teams now total dropped. And they're saying the powers that be are saying, oh, it's because of format. The format is boring. It's not exciting. We've got to get on TV. And I keep arguing that this is a complete ruse. It really has nothing, some maybe minutely to do with that. And, you know, if you want to come up with a TV hoochie-coochie format for anything, you go ahead and do it. But for the smaller, there at Ave Maria, and for some of the smaller colleges, and for the teams that are never going to be on TV, what are we talking about, and why are they doing this? Are they trying? Do they have a different agenda? Just your impression, Mike, about this. Is it a ruse, and is there a reason why they are trying to pull the wool over everybody's eyes?
Well, I think honestly, the format is the least of your issues. And I'm saying that because I can look back, okay, let's talk about the Golden Age. Okay, they played two out of three. And the programs were growing.
Singles and two out of three sets in singles and two out of three sets in doubles. A kid could play six sets in a match, and that was commonplace. It was just what we did. And kids did buckle over from fatigue. Okay.
Yeah, and that's exactly what we did. And that never even became an issue. I can't remember. The only thing I remember in junior college was that there was an impact on some schools that had to travel great distances in the time of, you know, with driving. And so some conferences, not all of them, went to a 8-game pro set. They were falling like the NCAA factor and doubles, but every match counted. And I think that, like I said, the format is the least of the problem. Let's go back to the metaphor about the programs in the forest, the trees in the forest. That is where it really comes down to, why did we go in that direction? What happened in that direction? It had nothing to do with format. And until we're able to at least admit, do we have more programs now than we did 25 years ago, or do we have less? Just exactly where we are. because people, you have to pull out the stat sheet here. You have to look at this from a point of accounting. It's numbers. And the numbers don't dictate about format. They talk about other issues. They talk about issues of budgeting. They talk about how athletic departments are taking a look about tennis in itself. There are greater issues that are out there than the format. You know, the format, we've had a little bit of change. We went from, you know, back in the day when you had to win, you could be 22-20 in a match, but they started the tiebreaker. That type of issue. But it doesn't reflect nearly the problem issue. The problem issue comes down to just how, I think a couple reasons. One, it comes down to a scholarship issue. I think that when we get into scholarships, we're getting into a business and a money issue that I think has corrupted a lot of the colleges. I'm not saying all of them, but it definitely has an impact. The other thing I think that's really important to know is that when I talk to agencies that are trying to, you know, give me a player, and the first thing I ask them in these countries is, why don't you have an intercollegiate program yourself? And what they tell me to a person is because their schools won't support it because they're about academics. And that this is a place that they send their players because they know they can get scholarships. Go ahead.
Mike, and I just jump in there. We had Luke Jensen on who coaches at Syracuse, and he's very pridefully and rightfully so recruited only American young ladies to Syracuse, which is in the ACC now. So we'll see. I'm hoping that he hangs tough and only recruits Americans. But he said that coaches or federations actually recruit him to come to their country. A European country may fly him over and wine and dine him and then say, by the way, here are our kids. And by the time that happens, he has to take one of those kids. Well, I mean, think of how ridiculous we are acting in doing this, and the fact that we have no checks or balances to this all. And people now are almost afraid to talk about the foreign issue like it's something against political correctness. The last point is, in the mid-'80s, Mike, I asked my athletic director when Title IX started moving very, very fast. I said, will they ever drop tennis? And he said, there is no way they'll ever drop tennis programs, and this is the reason why. He said, you get most visibility, and the highest level of former player support as far as financially and things, people who play tennis and golf usually go on be doctors, lawyers, and have executive jobs and high-level jobs. So he said, you get the most for the least amount of money. The courts are already built. He says, don't worry. But we never saw this other thing coming around to hit us in the back of the head. Mike, we got to go to commercial, and we'll be right back. Sure. I want to ask you how to solve the problem. I'm going to give you the wand, and you're going to be able to make everything right with your ideas. If it's good enough, we'll sure get it out there. Hang on just a few minutes. Chuck Creasy will be right back. This is Coach Chuck Creasy, and I want to talk to you about the camps I do in the summer. ChuckCreasy.net. Go to ChuckCreasy.net, K-R-I-E-S-E.net, and look on the camp system and on the camp system, and you will see that we have camps in this all summer long in South Carolina, Atlanta, and in Charleston, South Carolina as well. It's ChuckCreasy.net. Total tennis training camps for 38 years have taught youngsters about the physical, the mental, and the emotional aspects of the game. Tennis and momentum is the most powerful force in all sports. We all talk about momentum. We hear about it all the time on TV and sporting events. but no one really knows how to control this magical power. I've been teaching momentum control tactics since 1979. I'd like to encourage you to send your son, your daughter, your student to our Total Tennis training camps this summer throughout the South in June and July. Go to chuckcreasy.net for our camps. See you this summer. Coach Chuck Creasy back with American Tennis and our guest, Mike Napoli. And, Mike, the wisdom you have is long-earned, many years, 45 years in tennis, and all that you've done in the college arena. And you've taught hundreds, and that's your real legacy as we look back. But, okay, look, Mike, we've got I'll give you a stats. I give them to the people listen, our listeners each week. But in 1984, we had 39 players who had grown up in the USA, then they went to college at American colleges. 39 players made top 100 in the ATP Tour. John Isner is the only player we have right now that played college and is in the top 100. That's appalling, isn't it? More appalling is that it's been 20 years since Lisa Raymond played at Florida. We've had a few girls in and out of there, but we're doing a terrible job at developing players. College used to be the training ground, and now it's sort of the place where foreign players go after they're done with their pro career, or foreign players go to get education on our tax dollars, and foreign players... Look, nobody has anything against, people coming here and doing their best and going to college, but it's completely destroyed the infrastructure of college tennis, and it's had a serious effect. We can see how long has it been since we have had somebody in one of the Grand Slam semis or quarterfinals even. You know, other than Serena, I mean, I don't see it on the men or women's side. So fix it, Mike. Tell us what we need to do.
Well, I think a couple of things. One is we have to understand the international system. That's one. It's based on national support. It's based on looking at kids at a very young age, getting them into these high-profile programs, and basically, you know, sending them forth into the United States. The one thing that people don't even realize, even when we get these high international players, a lot of them can't even stay in the United States because of the immigration policies. You know, so it's kind of ironic in the way that we'll import these internationals to go to school here, and many of them can't even stay here or don't even stay here. If I was going to change anything, and this is going to be controversial in itself, I would get rid of athletic scholarships. That's what I would do. I would mandate. I'm not talking about going to the Ivy League system where you can be given financial aid and you basically use it like that as well. I'm talking about if you're going to come to the United States, and it would be on an academic endeavors. You have to meet academic requirements.
That
okay,
would
are
be
you
the
talking
first
about
one.
Football and basketball too, or are you just talking about
I am talking about all sports, and this is where the controversy starts. I think what has happened is that we've turned a lot of the colleges into these financial. If you think of, here's the thing, what happens when you think about Penn State? The first thing you think about is football. You don't think about their PhD programs. You know, you can throw out other schools, Florida State, Miami. You're not talking about the academic factors that stand out whatsoever. Your immediate sense goes right to sports. And I believe that sports are an integral part of a sound mind and sound body. We need to have them. But what happens is that when we get them to one extreme, then we enslave ourselves to the fact that that's the only thing that's important. So that would be the first thing I would do.
Mike, let me jump in. I don't think there's any doubt at all of anybody out there that wouldn't agree with the fact that college educations have been dumbed down. I mean, it used to be that it was a big, big deal to be able to go to college. And if you could work your way through college, you'd really done something. But now, forget it, they've all been dumbed down. So you're suggesting it might be that we've just basically put too many people in who shouldn't be in based on athletics and not based on, now the other side's going to argue, Mike, well, we give all these people opportunities and they should, you know, they've been hurt because of one thing or another. So go ahead. I mean, should we have an elite branch of colleges? You know, I mean, what are your thoughts?
Well, I think one of the things is that when, first of all, if you look at what's happening now, with these mega conferences that are coming into effect based on television rights. We're not talking about academic integrity. We're talking about television. And what you have as a result of that is you already have a division here of the have and have-nots. You've already have your segregation. And this is the thing that I think is, to me, is the final ironic factor is with these mega conferences that basically it's a money issue. I don't think we could go any further out there because I think we've gone to a point that we're not going to come back. We're going to see a lot more sports that are going to be dropped as a result of what's happening because of the money and because of the business. And one of the things that I would like to see from the ITA point of view is that what they need to have in one of their workshops, and I suggested this last year, is that they bring in at least one or two of the high-level athletic directors and then small college athletic directors for a workshop so that coaches can ask those questions. It isn't the coaches that drop these sports. It's administration. And that's, I think, what needs to be turned here is the ITA has to look at this as how can they educate coaches on where tennis stands exactly.
Right, right. And here's the dirty little secret is, you know, I sent you out. By the way, folks, go to tennisrecruiting.net and Zoo Tennis a week ago Monday and check out my article on what really happened with the 21-19 vote down at the ITA convention. And, Mike, you're right on, but here's the crux of the matter. People are scared to stand up and speak out. Every week I say stand up, speak out, stay professional. You can say anything you want. Our country was based on the First Amendment and our First Amendment rights. We have the right to say anything we want. We have a preference. We are not prejudiced. We have a preference with what we believe in and what we don't believe in. Your idea here is getting me to think. I'm going to encourage you to please sign up for Lisa Stone's Parenting Aces blog and also the We Coach Tennis, J.P. Weber's We Coach Tennis. These are very two active blogs. Your ideas need to get out there. But here's the crux. Right now, we're only a year or 2 years away from paying all football and basketball players something. And when they open up that can of worms, it's over as far as small colleges are concerned. It's over for top app. It's over for non-revenue sports. We will probably go to tuition waivers. And you know what, Mike? I would not be against that. I'm with you. I'm sick to death of seeing other countries' former Davis Cup players playing for these schools and parading like, listen, I got a great U.S. college team, and it's made up of all these girls and guys. By the way, Mike, Title IX was not set up to protect women from other countries, was it? It was set up to protect your daughter and my daughter in USA, United States of America-born women. The scholarships were supposed to go to ours, but 65% of the scholarships are going now in the scholarship programs to international women, and it is a joke. And I'm sick of it. You're sick of it. And I think this is why college athletic directors are dropping sports. They cannot get a following, Mike. I worked in Thailand. I had a position for about 2 years. And if you brought all Americans and played on the Thai national team, or if you brought all Americans and played on a French club, do you think anybody would come out and watch? Nobody would. And that's what we have here. We have all international players who play on our college teams. And therefore, what happens is people don't care. They want to be able to pronounce the names of the girls at the Australian Open. I can't even pronounce them. It's Lee Na was pretty easy, okay? But other than that, we can't pronounce the names of the teams. So that's a fantastic idea. So you're saying drop all scholarships. Let's make colleges academic again, academically centered, where it matters. So go ahead, Mike.
I was going to say that's exactly what the international recruiting agencies are saying. I mean, we're not even listening to them. They're making the point for us. The reason why these players aren't here going to college here is because their countries are only investing in academics. We know your countries are investing in our athletes, but our country isn't, other than if you're in the play for the Davis Cup. And so we don't even listen to what they're telling us. And that was the first thing I picked up, and that was why I asked the question, why doesn't your university have intercollegiate sports? And, you know, when those people are telling me, it's because they have an outsource, which is us, and then I'm looking at my tax dollars, and I'm saying, wait a minute, you know, I don't want to have any part of this. If they can come over here and they can make it on their academic standing and they want to, you know, come out as a walk-on, I have no problem with that. And I think the biggest thing that actually I looked at, and it was from a coach, a current coach that has won some titles, and I remember him talking about this, and I saw the look in his eyes when he was talking about it, was that you're here to win at all costs. You're here to win a championship. And I could see in his eyes that wasn't something he wanted to do. And
nobody cares, Mike. Mike, tell me who won NCAA Women's D1 last year. Do you know?
UCLA.
Look. Too long. But tell me who the heavyweight champion of the world is right now, Mike. Tell me who the heavyweight champion. Huh? You don't know. The toughest man in the world. We used to all know who the Floyd Patterson, Rocky Marciano. Okay, let's go further. Do you know who won women's volleyball? Do you know who won men's soccer last year? Do you know who won men's soccer? All right, point I'm making, you're a coach, I'm a coach, and by the way, I don't know any of these either, okay? The Klitschko is the heavyweight champion of the world, by the way. The point is nobody really cares except those coaches and those players. Yep. They think it brings some kind of fame, but people are saturated now. with the hype, with expenses, with everything. We're going to Super Bowl next week or this weekend, and by that time people will forgot who even that Auburn played in the championship game. They might remember Florida State won, but they'll forget even that Auburn played in it. So the point is, you're exactly right. We really are barking up the wrong tree. And okay, so give us a plan of how to go about writing. I've always heard that the pen is mightier than the sword. But do you do any writing, Mike?
Yes. One of the things I've been proud of is I taught academic classes in college. And so I do a lot of writing, a lot of research.
Well, you know, Mike Kernodle up at App State is a PhD and a professor in kinesiology, and he's one of the smarter people in tennis out there. I'm not saying he's the smartest, but he's pretty close. And he comes on the show sometimes and has great things to say. But I really think that our leadership is basically we need the people who have been in the field a long, long time to understand it. But we need some people who are pure of heart in a way that they really, really want for the educational aspect to become more important than the entertainment aspect. Because I think we're going to be 14th or 15th, no matter how you cut it, on a college campus as far as entertainment, because you really do have to understand tennis to enjoy it. So what else could we do besides write? Folks write, stay professional, don't address issues, address people, address issues, but write to people. What else, Mike?
Well, I think one of the things is in the hiring process. I think if you look at the hiring process, especially when it comes down to like tennis, in comparison to football or baseball or the major sports, you see a completely different requirement of individuals that are coming into being coaching at a high level that have very basic backgrounds. And I think that's one of the other issues. A lot of the hiring now, I can remember going to the ITA convention and they asked how many people have been coaching, you know, less than 5 years, first-time job. Must have been 50% of everybody raised their hand. But the other one was how many, you know, had been coaching.
Yeah.
You know, and I think what's lost here is that in the major coaching, in the head coaching positions, there's not enough of experience that is hired that have been actually in developing players, developing programs. I think that has a large part to do with it.
We absolutely, it takes, this is the hardest game that there is. It is a game that we should honor. It's a game that we should look at the depth of and respect it as such. And I think that during the open era is when we started promoting what you could get out of it instead of what you put into it. Basically, if you honor tennis, it will honor you. Only got about a minute, Mike. Any final thoughts here?
Well, I think that I'd like to always look at this as what can we do? What can we do to improve the situation, not only improve our situation, improve every other situation? My thing is you've got to get those old fossils. You've got to get those guys that have had years of experience into a think tank. Those guys, even if they don't always agree with each other, their years of wisdom are invaluable. I'd like to see the ITA really reach out to those veterans like Paul Torricelli, Hugh Bream, you know, guys like that have been.
The Paul Scarpas, the Don Higginses, the Dave Snyders, the Tut Bartsons, and those people. And you're exactly right, and we need to respect that wisdom. We got to go. Mike, I wanted to thank you here. Hang on a second, but we've got to.
Made in America. Sam. He's got the red, white, blue, flying high on the farm. Semper Fi tattooed on his left arm. Spent a little more in the store for a tag in the back of his U.S. America. Made in America. Made in America.
And it's like to thank Mike Napoli. Mike, do you have an email or a website people can go to so they could contact you?
Yes, my email is mnapoli, N-A-P-O-L-I, napoli1@gmail.com.
Okay, Mike Napoli, thank you. God bless you for your insights and your wisdom in all the years that you've been working with young people. And folks, we're going to remind you every week, noon Eastern Standard Time, it's Chuck Creasy. We'll be back with American Tennis. I want to remind you also that you're in the process of winning or losing every day of your life, and it has very little to do with a win or a loss. Jump in the fight. Jump in the fight. We need you. God bless you all.
Opinions stated by various contributors to the UR Tennis Network and its programming are not to be considered as endorsed by the UR Tennis Network. Participants are encouraged to use their own discernments and draw their own conclusions. All information, products, and services offered by the UR Tennis Network are for personal use only. The UR Tennis Network does not confirm nor deny the validity or accuracy of information contained within the network. Any products or services provided for should be used solely for entertainment purposes. We emphasize the idea of keeping an open mind and not construing the products, services, or data as factual.